عليكم ورحمة الله وبركاته.
وعليكم
I
السلام
just
ورحمة
before we
الله
get
وبركاته.
just before we get into our نصيحة, there was a question. Is that verse اتخذوا أيمانهم جنة فصدوا عن سبيل الله فلهم عذاب مهين. Is that supported by verse 9 in Surah Baqarah? يخادعون الله والذين آمنوا وما يخدعون إلا أنفسهم وما يشعرون. They think they deceive Allah and those who believe, but they only deceive themselves. Certainly, it's the exact same point that is being driven home. It's the exact same point that is being driven home. And Allah repeatedly mentioned that in relation to the munafiqeen. Okay, that's just tied to that point. We started our نصيحة بإذن الله تعالى. أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم. بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم, والصلاة والسلام على رسوله الكريم وعلى آله وأصحابه أجمعين. I welcome the second year class to this majlis here. Last week we spoke a bit about you know, the objectives of the Sharia, and we spoke a bit about good or bad. You know, we spoke about the objectives of the Sharia, the importance of knowing that and appreciating that. But we also spoke about the limitations of using a type of reasoning that's becoming prevalent in our time, where people basically try to look at universals, those universal objectives of the Sharia, and ignore all the specifics, the ayat, the ahadith, all of those things, and they try to use those objectives. What do I mean thereby? They say, well, Sharia preserves wealth, or the Sharia strives for justice. Right? Then they come up with a conception, or they use a conception of justice that is not Quranic. That's not defined by the Quran. In fact, it may even go against the Quran. Right? And they say that that is what should be striven for on account of the fact that Islam has as one of its objectives, that it strives for justice. I'll give you an example. Well, this was last week's discussion, kind of. I'm just, you know, touching this again. I'll give you an example. If I ask you, does the Quran strive for justice? What would you tell me? Or does Islam and the Sharia as a whole strive for justice? Anybody will tell me yes. Even the simplest, least educated Muslim will tell me yes, Islam strives for justice. But then what happens is people go to notions or conceptions of what justice is. Like they may look at, you know, they may look at a, this is now not, I'm not holistically getting into discussion of this, but they may borrow a feminist conception of justice. A radical feminist conception of justice, where justice means equality in every way. Right? They're striving for equality in every way. And then they say, well, because the Quran strives for justice, because the Sharia strives for justice, when it comes to inheritance, then our male children and our female children must get the same inheritance. And they may try and argue that, look, the Quran only has the difference of a male getting double that of a female because of the fact that in those days males were breadwinners. Or they may say that, they may even try to reinterpret the Quran to say that, no, the Quran doesn't actually say that at all, that the male must get double that of the female, though the verse is evidently clear for those who know the Arabic language. But then they come and say, the Sharia and the Quran strive for justice, Right? Justice means something that they get from a foreign place, and then they say the Sharia strives for that. The Quran strives for that. That's the incorrect way. Last week we discussed the idea that the definitions of, or the specifics of what those objectives of the Sharia are defined by, not by our own notions, our own, you know, our own thoughts of, you know, what seems rational to us. Rather, they are defined by the Quran and Sunnah. They are defined by the Quran and Sunnah. Either the idea of what we deem to be good, there must be a specific proof from the Quran or the Sunnah, like the ayah of Quran or a hadith, or it must be something whose meanings are founded in the Quran and Sunnah. It must be universally in accordance with everything else that is clear from the Quran and Sunnah, and it must contradict the Quran and Sunnah or the other sources of Islam. That's a very, very important. I know that's a very deep topic, actually, and I'm just saying it like a matter of fact point. But you know, if you can appreciate that point, it will help you. And you know, the older generation may not. An older generation for me is like most people, because I'm not that old. But you know, for my generation, I'm like 29 years old. Those who were like at university just before that, and actually maybe the generation of my parents even as well. There was a strong secularist way of thinking that our people became infatuated with, the humanist way of thinking that our people became infatuated with, and it's important to understand that we appreciate the Quran and Sunnah on the level of universals, meaning the universal principles that flow throughout them in the formula of the maqasid or the higher objectives of the Sharia. But we also appreciate the Quran and Sunnah and the sources of Islam in relation to the specifics, the individual components that make up those universals. We appreciate it at all levels. We adhere to it at all levels. We submit it to all levels, right? And I mentioned to you, the verse of the Quran, very profound verse for me at least. Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala says, وَلَوْ أَنَّا كَتَبْنَا عَلَيْهِمْ أَنْ اِقْتُلُوا أَنفُسَكُمْ أَوْ اِخْرُجُوا مِنْ دِيَارِكُمْ. Had we prescribed for them, theoretically, hypothetically, had we prescribed for them, kill yourselves and exit from your homes, be dispelled from your homes, most of them would not have done it except for a few. وَلَوْ فَعَلُوا مَا يُعَظُونَ بِهِ لَكَانَ خَيْرًا لَهُمْ أَشْدَ تَثْبِيتًا. Had they done what they were commanded to do, it would have been much better for them and a much firmer position. Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala is teaching us that the important thing is not that you do what you think is good for you, but that you follow what Allah has defined as good for you. And that comes down to following the command of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. That's really important for you. But following, you know, following what I want to discuss today is this idea that Allah only wants good for us. Yes, we must follow even the specifics of what Allah wants. But how fortunate we are, how lucky we are, that Allah only wants good for us. Allah didn't tell us kill yourselves. Allah didn't tell us dispel from your homes. Allah only tells us things that will enhance our quality of life holistically, universally, for the individual and the society, for now and for the future. Allah only commands us to do that which is truly beneficial for us. And Allah prohibits us only from those things that are harmful to us. There isn't a thing that Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala prohibits you from, except that the harms in that thing far outweigh the benefits. So in fact, in Allah commanding you, He's benefiting you. And Allah prohibiting you, He's protecting you. And that's something we don't always see because, you know, we live in a society that's infatuated with liberalism, with this idea of liberty. And what's born from us? I mean, this stuff comes from the French Revolution, guys who, you know, take a bath twice a year. They thought this stuff up and it became the, you know, the ideals of our world. In reality, yes, we do strive for freedom. We do afford people freedom. But we also know that in our nature, in our makeup, in our reality, we are abd. We are slaves. And a good slave does his master's bidding. So we recognize that we have freedom. Yes, Allah gave us freedom. But we recognize that willfully, we want to exercise our in a manner that pleases Allah. We want to restrict ourselves. We want to reign in ourselves. To do or to submit to Allah's law. And in submitting to Allah's law, we know, we trust, and we are convinced that that is the best path to benefit and pleasure in this life and the next in the most holistic way. Why? Because we have trust in Allah. So that's we're not infatuated with that idea of unfettered liberty. No. We are convinced of the idea that restricting ourselves to the law of Allah is what brings the greatest benefit. Right. That's the one side of the coin. And that's what I wanted to highlight today. When we think of the words, you know, when we think of any type of restriction, any type of limitation, then because of this worldview that's so infatuated by, that's so bought into this ideal of liberty, it seems that restriction seems like a bad thing. But we recognize that it isn't so. We recognize that it isn't so. In fact, you know, one of the strange things about our world, you know, they call it, they would say we have a hedonistic society. A society that almost just exists to pursue pleasures. The funny thing is that hedonism is the very thing that is making our society unable to appreciate and enjoy pleasures. It's just one of those contradictions. And it shows you the importance of submitting to the will of Allah. You know, I was listening to a scholar, a very brilliant, genius, big scholar of our time, Sheikh Abdul Hakim Murad, and he was speaking, or he mentioned something that he had researched, wherein he said that the average American male has half the testosterone levels of an Egyptian male. And one of the factors, one of the things, and so basically he has a lesser ability experience, you know, the pleasures that males experience. But one of the main factors that cause that lowering levels of ability to experience pleasure is the society that that waters that down, that almost kind of like causes an assimilation between males and females. Like you would be hard pressed, very, very hard pressed to find a traditional Muslim society where males and females interacted with each other like very closely as if there's no difference between them. You would be hard pressed to find examples of that in a traditional Muslim society. I'm not saying that it didn't exist, no, it may have existed, but it wasn't the norm. In our Western society, the Western ideal is that I as a male must interact with a female, like there's no difference between this. Okay, they're hypocritical in that ideal, because when it doesn't suit them, then they will, you know, they will oppose that idea. But in general, that's what the ideal is. So what I'm saying is that the very, you know, hedonistic lifestyle that people live in our time, in the Western world, that we kind of like, what, you know, form part of it. That very lifestyle, it deprives them, that lifestyle of seeking pleasure deprives them of the ability to experience pleasure. And it's just like a paradox of sorts, or like a contradiction of sorts that exists in society. But that indicates to us the fact that, you know what? Not everything that we may think best is actually best. No. Be convinced that following what Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala wants us to do, that therein lies true solutions that will benefit us. We must be convinced of that. And coming to that realization, profound, increases you in gratitude for Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, like in inexplicable and in like, I don't know what the correct word is, but like in unending ways. That no matter what situation you find yourself in, you ask yourself the question, what is it that would be pleasing Allah for me to do in this situation? And then when you come to realize what it is, you may think, hey, but that's a difficult thing to do. But then you realize, well, actually, Allah only told me to do that thing. Though it seems difficult at this moment, Allah only told me that thing out of His generosity towards me, out of His kindness towards me, out of His love for me. That though it's difficult, me not doing it is even more difficult for me. It will lead to greater challenges for me. Just that thought that in every moment when I do something that pleases Allah, that Allah directed me to do this because He loves me. Because He expresses His generosity towards me. That increases, or that increases one's level of shukr, of gratitude and appreciation and love for Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala constantly. And that's a narrative that we need to popularize. That's the narrative that we need to make the norm in our society. Children shouldn't be told constantly, you can't do this because Allah said so. You can't do that because Allah said so. You can't do that. You have to do this. You have to do that. That's the way Allah teaches us about it. You should tell the child, don't do this. It wouldn't be pleasing to Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. And you know what? Allah commands us to do something else because that is what will benefit us. Allah commands us to do that because if we do the other thing, Allah knows we will bring harm upon ourselves. No, Allah tells us to do this not to restrict our liberty, but Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala does this to benefit us and to protect us from harm. Just like when the mother tells the child, don't play with fire. The mother doesn't tell the child that because the mother doesn't want the child to play with fire, to restrict the liberty of the child. The mother tells the child not to play with fire because the mother loves the child. And that is the case with Allah. Allah's knowledge of the harms and benefits and things is unlimited. It is all-encompassing. It is timeless. When Allah tells us to stay away from something, He knows that the harms in there are greater than the benefits. And when Allah compels us to do something, then He knows that the benefits in there are things that we cannot do without. And if we popularize that narrative, then perhaps our children and even ourselves, we will be more willing to bind ourselves, to submit ourselves to those laws of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. That's not exactly what I wanted to speak about today, but what I wanted to speak about today, I'll speak about next week. We're in there for now, inshallah. Jazakumullah khairan. If anybody has any comments or thoughts, bismillah. I'm actually gonna end it now, guys. Can I have a break? And if anybody wants to share anything, you may do that as well. Jazakum Allah khairan. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Alaikum salam.
Alaikum
salam wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. Ziad, I'm gonna make you the host. You can just make my khatila host when he comes in.